this a metal thing?
Yes.
Taste.
David.
David.
David, what is this?
It's pretty thick.
Great break.
That's a kill a lot of people. Just tell me what you want me to fuck.
I have big dicks and a tiny vagina.
Oil me up, daddy.
I can't believe that Bryce prefers big tits.
Mistletoe alert.
This is butt country.
This guy was a real jerk.
How long can Hugo be pregnant?
Chomp, 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 chomp.
Oh, she's such a dick, David.
Okay, everybody, put on your corpse handling gloves.
Ew.
Hoodie Picasso.
Oh, put on your corpse handling gloves, kids. Hello and welcome to Horror Movie Talk Plus. That's right, folks. We changed our name with one symbol, and that's it. We've transcended genre boundaries and now sometimes cover other movies, cool movies, slick movies. Make sure you rate and review and subscribe on iTunes. Toss us some nice words. That would be nice of you. Full video available on YouTube. Don't be a square. Make sure to share. Also, check out patreon.com/horrormovietalk, the equivalent of the adult section at your video rental store. You remember those, right? You're super old. If you want to add your P to the community pool, call us at 682-253-4468. Get on the show. Say what you mean what you say. As always, we have Fart Simpson crammed into the production booth, and I'm me, David Day. And across the state of the wide, wonderful state of Washington sits my partner, Bryce Hansen. Say hello, Bryce.
Hello.
We have a fabulous show for you today. Fabulous. We will be reviewing Asteroid City. That's right. This is a Wes Anderson, the latest Wes Anderson film. We'll start out by giving a brief review and our score for the movie. I think this one's available on Peacock right now for free. I'm not sure. I saw it in the movie theater. A little thing you might have heard of. We score on a scale of 1 to 10. After we score it, we'll get into spoilers, take a deeper dive into what we liked and hated about the film. And later in this episode, we will be taking your calls again at 682-253-4468. See what you got to say about all kinds of silly shit. Wes Anderson has made a new film. That's right. Just like the old films. And you'll probably chuckle at it and be delighted like the smug little shit that you are. We follow, in this movie, in Asteroid City, we follow the narrative of a writer who is writing a play in real time as though the play is happening in real life. If that sounds confusing, it is. The characters in the play find themselves in a remote desert location called Asteroid City for a young scientist's competition and stargazing event. Already it sounds like a Wes Anderson film. That's just kind of the second sentence. All the characters are tragically human and simultaneously completely devoid of expressive human emotion. An alien shows up and blows everyone's mind, but not so much that it changes the trajectory of anyone but a single boy's life or mind. Life is weird and complicated. Shrug shoulders and expressively, do the thing. My review for Asteroid City goes, I can honestly say that Asteroid City is exactly as worthwhile and fun and interesting as any of Wes Anderson's catalog of films. Sometimes it's nice to feel the wind in your hair, and that's exactly what I get when I start any Wes Anderson movie except for the Darjeeling Limited, which I hate without reason. Asteroid City is a bombshell full of A-list actors, incredibly lit scenes, and emotionless emotion. It has fun dialogue and lots of interesting eye candy to keep you entertained. In fact, Asteroid City kind of understands the medium of film so well that it's almost perfect in its execution. That is to say, a film is meant to be interesting to look at, with dialogue and concepts to stir the mind and characters who evoke impressive emotion within the watcher. I have a few little critiques of it. I will say that some of the dialogue is delivered so quickly and with so little difference in inflection that I often found myself not knowing what had just been said. It could just be my old ears, but it was hard for me to keep up with a lot of the dialogue. And also the movie theater I was in did not have great sound. Hmm. Also, it's hard to care too much about some of the main characters for a couple of reasons. Firstly, it's divulged that the story of Asteroid City is a play that's being written by another main character, and kind of this level of extraction seemed overly complicated and a little bit unnecessary to the story. The same effect could have been achieved with some inner monologue or something like that. Second is the story is spread among so many characters that few receive enough screen time individually to make me care too much about any of them. These are kind of minor sins, so it's not like a big deal. And it's otherwise a fun and funny exploration of the human condition by the world's most symmetrical film director. I give this a 9 out of 10. What do you think, Bryce Tholomew?
Yeah, I don't think it's Wes Anderson's best. Like, there's ones that...
I don't think it's his best either, no.
Like, I don't agree with the, like, it's as good as, like, pretty much anything else he does. Like, there's a certain level of quality, sure, that he brings to everything. But, like, in terms of, like, engagement and entertainment value, like, I've got kind of the pinnacle for me is probably, was it the Hotel Bucharest? Bucharest Hotel?
Budapest.
Budapest.
Grand Budapest Hotel.
That's it. You got it.
For me, it's Moonlight Kingdom.
Moonlight Kingdom, Royal Tenenbaums, and the Life Aquatic are like the ones that I think of are like just masterpieces. Wow, really, really shiny on my dome right now.
That's that sun. Oh, that's a star coming in through the window.
It's like a little less, I mean, Wes Anderson's movies are all pretty cold in terms of, like, emotional realism, you know, it's like he has a style.
This one's
a little more with the added, separation of, like, the, kind of the meta-narrative of, like, just the format of the movie, which is... It starts out saying, like, this movie is about a production, and so anytime that we see anything in color, it's actually a film representation of a stage production, which is weird.
Yeah,
and then it
I
cuts
agree.
Back to the black and white, and it's the kind of the making of the stage production, which is ironic because, like, you never actually see the staged production being performed. Like, you just get little glimpses of a stage with the set and some of the actors, like, walking off of it, but
it's some weird attempt at building a fifth wall.
it's very much I mean, I look at it as like Wes Anderson's attempt to kind of dip his toes in like a Philip Kaufman type script where it's layers upon layers of, like, narrative devices, and then, but the thing that's missing is, like, you know, kind of the point of the movie. Like, there's not, like, a real strong, like, perspective or lesson learned necessarily in the movie. It's more of, like, a platform for the surrealness of everyday life, you know, and just human interaction. But it is really good. I'd give it, like, it's not a strong recommend from me. I'd give it like a 6 or 7, probably just because I like Anderson. I'd lean towards 7.
See, I don't know. I think, I mean, it sounds like we agree pretty much across the board about a lot of the stuff. I tried real hard throughout to be like, what's the point, you know? And I did find something that I would kind of hearken to that, in that meta narrative that he throws in with the, you know, with the fifth wall or whatever this we shall call this stage production, and then the return to quote unquote normal life. I found a little bit of something in there, but you know, I mean, I don't know. It's as much. I do feel like it's as much an interesting film as any of his good films. I don't know why I hate the Darjeeling Limited, but God, I started that movie and it was just, and Carrie and I both looked at each other and were like, what the fuck is this? This is stupid. And I felt like that's the only Wes Anderson movie I've just turned off out of rage and just been like, what the fuck? And then.
Yeah, I've still never seen that one. I think the French Connection or French Dispatch, his last movie, like I literally just fell asleep in the theater. Like I couldn't. It's good. It's kind of like similar to this one, is that there's just a lot of vignettes. Like the French Dispatch was definitely a kind of a what do you call it? Like an anthology movie, like lots of different stories and formats, and which was interesting, but some were much more interesting than others, and so you know your mileage may vary. Yeah, I think in terms of like Asteroid City, for like the takeaways of like, or what is the theme or like the, you know, lesson learned or the moral to the story or whatever, like there's two moments that kind of set that up. There's one that's like just the intro of, you know, Bryan Cranston being the Rod Sterling type that's introing the whole thing, which is like, this is, I can't even remember what he says. Maybe I can find it on IMDb, but it's basically like, this is all fake. Like this is, you know, a construction of, you know, fiction and all this stuff, and like setting up the format of like, this is a story of a playwright writing a play and getting it produced on stage, but it's really not about that. And then the second time is when the internal fourth wall is broken, where Jason, what's his name?
Schwartzman.
Jason Schwartzman walks off set and asks the playwright or the producer, like, am I doing it right? And that's like probably the most revealing scene of the movie, where it's literally like we're seeing like everything in color and is like the projection of a performance, and so it's kind of it's a stand-in for the projection that everyone has in real life. Like everyone's putting forth a performance of themselves, and then when it pulls back and it goes back into the, you know, quote unquote real world of the stage production, and we see like the background, and Jason Schwartzman is asking like if he's doing it good enough, it's more indicative of just the insecurity that people feel in their performance of life. That's how I interpreted it. It's kind of a, like, nothing in the film is portrayed as depicting reality, but in so doing, it's the stand-in for reality, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, so that was, so the Bryan Cranston one didn't hit me in any meaningful way, but definitely the Schwartzman one did. That was one of my two. The I think I'll get into the other one that struck me as significant in the spoilers section. But I don't know. I think I think it's a worthwhile. Would you say it's a worthwhile film to, you know, pull up on Peacock and check out?
Yeah, if you're a Wes Anderson fan, like, see it.
It is star-studded.
It is star-studded. I mean, you're going to get... It's like you get all these stars, but really what you're getting is a Wes Anderson movie performance, which is very stylized and kind of on the surface stilted. But you get a lot of, like, really dry humor, excellently executed from that style.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. I mean, I'd say, yeah, if you're a Wes Anderson fan, definitely see it. If you know, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's not like a strong recommend for everyone, but like if you like indie films or you just want to see something, you know, that's visually unique, definitely any Wes Anderson movie, you should go check it out.
Is Wes Anderson indie? Considered indie? Is this an indie production?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
really? What does it take to be an independent production?
I don't know.
Fair. Well, you know, guys. What's up? What's up? I'll tell you exactly what's up.
It's Wednesday, my dudes.
That's right. And that means it's time for us to yell advertisements in your ears, unless you're a smart person and you go to patreon.com/horrormovietalk. Pay us a couple of ducats over there. The price of one cup of coffee per month will get you commercial free, horror movie talk and you know, the after pod and a bunch of other digital perks dating back fucking years, maybe almost a half a decade. Wow. So much stuff. Lots and lots and lots and lots of stuff. And, you know, and it helps us out too, and we sure do appreciate it. You can also help us out by heading over to our shop at horrormovietalk.com/shop. If you like the artwork on any of these episodes, you can go over to Dustin Goebel's Instagram at dgoebel00. That's at dgoebel00 on Instagram, and tell him, hey, I appreciate what you do. I think it's pretty cool. And, you know, throw some of that big dick love around. And he'll appreciate it because he is, you know, a professional artist who fucks art. If you'd like to get a hold of us, call 682-253-4468. Thanks again for listening. And let's get into spoilers. Wow. There's something about Wes Anderson movies, Bryce. Something about them. I think that's fair to say. That, having said nothing, I do think it's extremely fair to say about Wes Anderson movies. You get insane shots that shouldn't be... They're just not possible, really, you know, in any... You've never seen them on film, really, except for in Wes Anderson movies. You've never seen them in real life, except for rarely, under extreme lighting conditions and circumstances where everything somehow becomes perfectly symmetrical. Like, there are little moments. You know, and I mean, to drive this point home, there's a whole subreddit called Accidental Wes Anderson where people... take pictures of shots that are just perfectly Wes Anderson-y. And I think that's cool enough to, you know, to hang your hat on as a director, to be so in a niche that just by looking at a shot you can go, oh, that's either Wes Anderson or influenced heavily by Wes Anderson. Oh, here we go. Is that what's happening now? Accidental Wes Anderson. Here we go. Yeah. Oh, there you go. Head on over to our YouTube channel.
Yeah, I mean, it's not unique to Wes Anderson to have, like, a symmetrical, you know,
kind of... Lighthouse, go back up!
Yeah, that was great. I mean, it's not unique to Wes Anderson to have, like, a symmetrical kind of artificial style, but he's definitely has a very strong aesthetic with his movies and has cemented himself as guy.
Wait, go back. That one was so cool. Oh, whoa. Okay, so there's a bridge. Okay, so our YouTube channel, well, you can see what we're looking at. This is so cool. There's this house on an island in, I'm assuming, you know, Minnesota or something like that, that has, like, a boardwalk out to the island and pictures of the house in all the different seasons. And in the winter, the lake is frozen over with snow all over it, but the boardwalk is also, man, I'm surprised Wes Anderson hasn't, like, based an entire movie around that.
The debut of North Korea's new tactical nuclear attack submarine. This is, man, yeah, some of these are so, so good.
Pretzel. Just the sign pretzel. That's right. All. I mean, it is. It's perfectly Wes Anderson. It doesn't say anything but the word pretzel.
Right.
And that's this town. This town, Asteroid City, is an interesting place and
Jesus.
One. Oh wow! Look at all that starlight. It's over here. It's not the Moonrise Kingdom. It's the Starrise Kingdom in Bryce's house. Anywho, so yeah, this town, Asteroids. You know, first, as Bryce mentioned in the review, Bryan Cranston comes on screen and he kind of introduces the concept of the movie. Which is fine. I don't know. Again, I'm just not a huge fan of this extra dimension of the movie. I don't feel it's necessary. But it's there. So, and it's got Bryan Cranston and Edward Norton in it. And Edward Norton is the writer of the play that we're watching that is Asteroid City. And so we kind of get that, and then you're dropped into the action. So it's a little bit, it fucks with your head a little bit because there's three levels of like kind of like narrative, like going just in the first minute or two of this movie where you're constantly, you know, when you start a movie, you're kind of like trying to find your bearing in the movie. You're like, where are we? What are we doing? What's happened? Who is this? And so the first person you get is Bryan Cranston, and he's talking directly to you through the fourth wall, the audience. And he's like, this is the thing that is happening in this next scene. And then we get Edward Norton, who's like, you know, writing the play. And it's all black and white. And so you're like, whoa, okay, wait. I just got used to Bryan Cranston. And then you get Edward Norton, and you're like, okay. And then you get dropped into this, you know, the Wes Anderson place, which is Asteroid City, and the desert being the most Wes Anderson setting ever conceived, because it is by nature much more symmetrical and interesting to look at than a lot of more busier backdrops.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because the setup is, it talks about the stage production of the play, and so they're describing, you know, whatever it is in a script, in like a play script, where it says like, this is what you need on stage. It's like, okay, you've got a one pump gas station, and then it pans the camera over and it shows like a little,
yeah,
you know, gas, you know, pump on the corner of the stage, and it's like, and then you need an overpass that goes to nothing, just permanently closed, and it pans over and sees this, and it describes the mountains in the distance, and you see, like, you know, the painted cardboard or like plywood on the stage of the show, and then it cuts to this, yeah, the Wes Anderson world of Asteroid City, like the film version, and it has all of that stuff to where on stage it's all representational. It's like, no, we have this little plywood cutout, you know, to represent a gas station.
Yeah.
And then you go into this, you know, quote unquote, real life looking thing, but it's also in real life, everything just feels super, super sparse. Like it's like someone was coloring a city, like a small yeah. town, and then just didn't finish, you know, halfway through. And so like, yeah, the setting of the desert, it makes it feel more like it makes more sense. Like there is, you know, ghost towns and kind of just weird single building enclaves in the middle of the desert along the highway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think the whole, the format of like having the story being the story of the creation of a play while showing a representation of the play in film is all, it all has a point. Like,
oh,
I think like it's
your inner monologue or something yeah, like that.
It's all like, that's like where the puzzle is. And I think what he's done in this movie is, okay, if you look at his movies before, and, you know, there will be the aspect or the veneer of, like, a normal story, you know. Stuff is going on, like, the film shows, like, a story, but it feels so weird because the characters feel, like, very artificial and flat, and they're, the script shows, like, very strong emotions and, like, situations, like, very complicated, like,
yeah.
Interpersonal drama.
Yeah.
But everyone's completely
played flat.
It's all played flat and very, very, very dry. And so it's the dialogue and the acting is representational of the actual drama that would, that is portraying that could happen in real life. And he's basically taken that phenomenon of his writing and like the style of acting that he directs and duplicated that with the visuals. 'Cause it's like the film or like the colored parts is it's all representational and you have to like do that extra level of interpretation of like, what is, what would this actually mean in real life, or what does this actually represent about the internal world of this story? And like the internal world is the production. You know, it's a stage play, and so there's a lot of background stuff where you kind of fill in of the neuroses of the actors, the neuroses of the playwright, and the drama of like putting on the production, all, you know, it's all the subtext of what you're seeing in the movie, and then it cuts back and forth. So it's, I don't know, it's an interesting layer to me, but also it's all, you know, with Anderson movies, it feels very academic and it feels very, very dry. So it's not super engaging, but for me, there's little moments that like really tickle me that either have like visual jokes or just like one-off dialogue jokes that can only land as well as they do if they're in a Wes Anderson movie.
I think a lot of it, to me, the way more of these stylized Wes Anderson movies, because you, like you said, you know, like Rushmore or Life Aquatic, to a degree, they're a little bit more free in the visual aspect. You know, it's a little bit more, you know, he's kind of finding his visual style. But in these, you know, in these more recent ones, Darjeeling and Grand Budapest and, you know, Moonlight and this one, they've kind of locked in, but to me, all of them feel a little bit like someone who was raised to not express emotions. Like their portrayal of the world that's swimming around them constantly, you know, like it's an attempt to control for like, look, everything I put forward is controlled. This isn't me. This is obviously Wes Anderson. It's like, I just imagine him as being a very stoic, controlled, not expressive person. And then he has the confusion of life swimming around him. And so in his art, it seems like the attempt is, here is my best attempt at like cleaning it up and yet also portraying all the messiness. So like this is how my mind works, is all this like emotionless like emotion that's, you know, that's it has to come out. But I don't want it to come out, but it has to, because that's unfortunately where we live. Like, it can't all be white, perfectly straight white picket fences and pecks on the cheek as I go off to work and wave like this. You know, it has to be messy. So this is my portrayal at expressing a messy thing that is life. But anyway, it's fucking cool is what it is. And it's like, I mean, he really, really, really gets the medium of film, you know, like I'd throw Michael Bay out the window every time over Wes Anderson, you know, still not entirely knowing who Michael Bay is or what he does. Other than I think Transformers.
Yep.
All okay, right. Good. Whew. Okay. Anyway, so we get into the desert, and yeah, this place is just quirky. Oh, and you know what? Another thing about this movie is it does help to see it with an audience. So I get to this theater, and it's the last night that they're showing this, and as such, like, it's a very small theater, but it was pretty packed. Like, it was full of people, but they were all insufferable, smug. And then, and I'm sitting there like, look at all these smug, insufferable kids. And then I'm like, oh, I'm here. Yeah. And so you have to deal with that. You have to kind of reckon yourself a little bit. But you know, they all were delighted by it, and they were all having a very good time, and hearing the laughter. It's so weird to me how laughter in theaters works, because I'm always off. I'm never laughing at the spots that other people are laughing at, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but it does put me off a little bit. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? You know, where this theater will be silent and I'll be like, anyway. Why do you think Anderson, Wes Anderson uses, Schwartzman for everything? Jason Schwartzman. He's been in all of them?
Well, he's got like a, you know, a cohort of actors that he uses in everything. Like,
oh yeah.
Bill Murray, Jason Schwartzman have been with him since the very beginning.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, Bill Murray was supposed to be the
Tom Hanks,
Steve Carell character.
Oh,
the hotel.
I'm glad he wasn't, because Steve Carell is.
Yeah, Steve Carell was perfect in that.
Perfect.
But, yeah, I mean, Jason Schwartzman, Edward Norton has also been in a ton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, Schwartzman is the only. Well, apart from maybe. The man who we can't name without having an absolute fucking bonkers conniption fit on this show. Every time he's named, there has to be like a 6-minute interlude of a big long song and dance. Anyway, he's in Darjeeling Limited and a few other ones. But Jason Schwartzman seems to be like almost like exclusively Wes Anderson. Like, he doesn't even do other things. I mean, I know he does do other things, but it's like, Is Anderson at the helm? No. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I mean, okay. He's in other things, but I mean, it's he's definitely more known for the Wes Anderson movies. Hmm. Yeah, I think probably Bill. Yeah, it's a battle between Bill Murray and Jason, who has been in more, but I think Bill Murray might eke him out a little bit.
Really? Are you sure it's not the fella I'm thinking of?
It used to be Owen Wilson, and I think Owen Wilson kind of had a little bit of falling out with him.
Do you think so? You think Owen Wilson can't hang anymore?
I mean, he's not in any of the recent ones that I can think of. But he used to be he used to co-write all these movies with him, Owen Wilson and Wes Anderson.
I think Owen Wilson had a suicide attempt, and I think when he did that, he seemed to drop off of a lot of radars. What was that? What was all that about, Bryce? Why did he do that?
I don't know. Yeah, I think so. Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, Royal Tenenbaums were all co-written with Owen Wilson. Those are all the first movies. I don't think after that he co-wrote anything.
So you're right. Bill Murray has been in 9 Wes Anderson movies. Oh no, that's a pretty recent article. That's as of June of this year. But let's see here. Jason Schwartzman has been in 8. Owen Wilson has been in 7. And then the guy Adrian Brody, he's been in 5.
Never heard of him.
You never heard of Adrian Brody?
No.
Yeah.
Let me look him up.
Oh, okay. And then Angelica Houston has also been in 5. And then we got a bunch of people who've been in 5. Bob Balaban, Edward Norton's been in 5. We got Tilda Swinton. Oh, Willem Dafoe's been in 5. Willem Dafoe was in this for just a minute.
Yeah. Interesting. Oh,
no, what's happening? Oh, we did it.
You know, in our Facebook group, I asked, just kind of an open-ended question. And one of the things specifically that they said they hated was the 6-minute needle drops, I think is what they called it. I don't know what they're talking about, but it might have something to do with Brody Quest.
You know, what are you going to do? You going to not play Adrian Brody? Well, I have to go pee. Okay. I suggest everyone else do the same.
I gotta sync up with Adrian. This is so hard. We'll be right back. You know what Wes Anderson should do? Wes Anderson should do a feature-length adaptation of Brody Quest.
Oh. Adrian Brody, 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 Adrian Brody.
Here we are in the neurons of Adrian Brody.
Squirrel. Well, you said you were hungry, Carly.
I don't think it's a squirrel.
It's a mink.
It's a mink.
Really, how do you know?
It's a mink.
In medical school, they make you work on animal cadavers before you get to the real thing.
It's a mink.
It's a mink.
It's a mink.
So anyways.
So there's your, Bryce was right. Bryce called it. That's a fucking callback right there. Holy shit. That's been a while. So in Asteroid City, we get a few things that kind of one of my little breakthrough moments with this movie was at the start. There, they roll up to this Asteroid City, or I should say, Jason Schwartzman and his children. He has, it seems like triplet girls, but not exactly triplet. There's just three little girls, and then a tween or teen boy with maybe the biggest nose I've ever seen on any person in the entire world. But he's a great actor, and he looks like Jason Schwartzman's kid. So bravo. Good casting. I feel like I've seen him in other things before too. Anyway, so he rolls up to this city, and the introduction of this city is like an atom bomb goes off in the background. And it's like, what the fuck was that? And they're like, oh, they're testing atom bombs in the desert. It's like, Jesus Christ. And then like a police car chasing robbers in a active police chase shootout comes straight down the strip off into the distance. And so,
which is never explained.
Well, it's not explained, but it's we'll get
there's no
back
payoff
to,
for it really.
Oh, there's payoff. Like, and this is the thing about but I can't really talk about my kind of like moment where I was like, oh, I kind of see what this was saying until towards the end. But it's just speculation. Anywho, so that happens to kind of set the scenes of what this city is. And then you kind of get Steve Carell, who basically owns the whole of Asteroid City with the exception of the garage, you know, the gas station. Although he might own, I think he talked about the gas station a little bit too. Anyway, Steve Carell is this one or two line guy who explains the city. He's like, I understand. Thank you. Which is like a very service industry response to every single question, concern, inquiry at all. Anybody says anything and Steve Carell just like, I understand. Thank you. Let me explain to you. So the what thing this is, and he's kind of automated this whole city into like pay machines, remember cigarette machines. And then obviously everybody knows about like, soft drink dispensers. Well, imagine those, but lined up in like to 40 or 50 machines, and they cover the range of everyone's needs in the city. So he's like very cheap, very automated the needs of anybody who might stop by or stay in this little Asteroid City he's got going on. And it's kind of, it's the reason for everyone being in Asteroid City is kind of like a young scientists competition sort of thing. So Scarlett Johansson has her daughter there, and her daughter's one of the young scientists. And then there's there's five young scientists in total, and they compete with each other with all these fucking astronomical inventions that they've made. And this is, I would say, the story of these kids, or at least the story of Jason Schwartzman and his oldest son, and Scarlett Johansson and her oldest daughter. I would say that's plot A. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But there are so many plots. There's plot B, C, D, E, and probably F, like, running through this whole thing as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's that's the main, like, and it's not much of a plot either. It's literally they meet each other and kind of fall in love.
Yeah.
Both sets.
Yes.
That's pretty much
it. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting, okay. Now it's hitting me how much more interesting that is, like, to, at least to talk about. Because, okay, so you have Jason Schwartzman, and he's seen some shit, and he's had life, you know, kick him in the balls a couple times. You know, he's a wartime photographer. So he has seen and cataloged all of the worst human atrocities in that life has to throw at you as his job. And then 3 weeks ago, his wife just died. And he hasn't told his kids yet, except for, like, once they get to the city. And then he's like, "So kids, your mother died 3 weeks ago." And they're like, "You're telling us our mother died 3 weeks ago?" And he's like, "Mm-hmm." And they're like, "Oh, geez, boy, that's rough." So you have Jason Schwartzman, who's seen a lot of shit. And then you have his son, who's like, you know, hasn't been deadened to the roughness of the world yet. And then the same thing is mirrored over here with Scarlett Johansson, who has had, you know, who has been a battered woman who has only been used for her looks because I think she's an actress or something like that. And so they're kind of dead to the world and the stuff that happens inside it. And their kids are kind of, you know, not deadened to the world yet and still, you know, able to, like, fall in love and be kind of people, which is, wow, it's an interesting kind of juxtaposition. I don't know. Do you have anything going on with that?
You lost me.
Did I?
A little bit. I mean, it's all, yeah, the kind of distance between the main characters is, like, Jason Schwartzman's character is, yeah, he's seen shit, and so he's, like, kind of got, like, the representational PTSD kind of thing, and then Scarlett Johansson is the Hollywood actress, which is, you know, has all the trauma around having to represent yourself in a certain way, and yeah, it's kind of a match made in heaven where they're all just kind of going through the motions.
I don't know. Did you have this problem that I had where the dialogue was hard to understand?
No. I don't think so. I mean, I was probably watching it with subtitles on, so that probably helps. You know, watch it on Peacock.
Mm. Yeah, it would help. Oh, and then we get a shot of Scarlett Johansson full frontal, I think. Was it full frontal or was it just boobs?
It was full frontal, but I think that wasn't Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, they, I mean, they even if it was, it was backwards and very, it was backwards in a mirror and very fast.
Yeah, it was a little blurry. I paused and tried to look really close and I couldn't see anything.
Which
is weird that she'd use a double, because she's been nude in other movies before.
What makes you say it's her double?
Because it says in IMDb.
Oh.
Said Scarlett Johansson said she had no problem using a body double to film her full frontal nude scene. However, she said it was awkward for Wes Anderson to direct it.
I have no problem not doing a thing, obviously. Right. Not doing a thing is very easy. So I guess there's we all come here for the science fair competition, but we end up there's also a stargazing event. And so this very fake made up thing is going to happen where you get to see these kind of three stars align and they all have boxes on their heads and all this baloney and they get to, they get to see this, this goofy thing happen. But in the midst of that, an alien shows up. And kind of throws everyone's world and it throws this whole thing into a big tizzy, which is like blowing everyone's mind. You know, the world changes for a minute because it's localized in this one place. There's photographic evidence. A lot of people have witnessed this It's a minute that changes the course of events for all these characters, and some to a greater degree than others. But most importantly, it locks down this city, and things kind of stop. You know, everyone is forced to continue their life, but in Asteroid City, because they're quarantined, they're kept in this spot. And for I think a week, and the younger people seem to be very affected by this. Jason Schwartzman's kids like, oh my God, what does this mean? It's so crazy. Oh, can you believe it? And he turns to his dad, and his dad's like, yeah, I took a picture of it. Of course, like what? Like yeah, but what next? And same with Scarlett Johansson. She's like, yeah, huh? Yeah, okay, great. So there's aliens. But the kind of the beautiful thing of that, one of the beautiful consequences of that is that for this week, nothing happens, really. Things are kind of stopped. They're kind of in a sort of weird stasis. And no bad things happen during that period. As soon as the quarantine is lifted, an atom bomb goes off in the background and the police chase goes through the town again. And this is the thing that made me go, oh, which is they all took for granted this time that they were forced to sit together and like experience life in peace as being the bad moment when the scary shit that happens resumes immediately upon the cessation of the quarantine. Like quarantine's over, atom bomb in the background, big mushroom cloud, cops and robbers. It's like, oh, this is the scary shit. Like the scary shit isn't the alien who showed up to literally just categorize an asteroid or a meteorite or whatever this thing is. He showed up, picks up this little meteorite, and then goes back up into his spaceship and flies away. And then he comes back and he puts it back down and there's like a number on it or something.
Yeah, and, that scene. I mean, it's in terms of like the importance of the movie. Like it's shocking how little the movie is about. But that scene is one of the best scenes, just because the alien looks so awkward. It's like the stop motion, but it's just like,
yeah,
just slowly moving, like yoink, and it just takes the asteroid. Because I don't think we even mentioned like the whole city is built around this asteroid that impacted and created this crater. And it's like the whole purpose of the town is basically to study or to celebrate this asteroid. And then the alien comes and just takes it and flies away.
Yeah.
And so you're like, well, now we had this dumb thing that our city was named after, but this much more momentous occasion just happened, but it also has no impact on anything and right. No one answers no questions. And then it just comes back and lightly places it back, you know, and then leaves.
Yeah, and the questions don't change. You know, the questions before the alien are, what's the meaning of life? Like, what is all that? Like, how do we explore the universe? What kind of science can push us forward? And then the alien happens, and they're like, holy shit, this might answer all the questions. Oh, my God, what the fuck? Oh, my God. And then the alien comes back, puts the asteroid back, and they're like, oh, shit, I still have all the same questions. It's like, well, yes. Which is to say, it's all absurd and fun and just enjoy the ride, you know, kind of like.
Yeah.
Fall in love with another nerd, or, you know, find that Lego piece that stubs your toe just right.
Yeah. I love the, I don't know if you caught it, but like the opening credits, it lists, you know, it, with the train coming in. And it lists like all the actors and stuff. Did you catch that? Like the final credit was Jeff Goldblum as the alien.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like, it's like,
so
oh.
It throws out there. Yeah.
Yeah. It throws out that Jeff Goldblum's the alien. And then the alien comes and it's just like a claymation alien, you know,
yeah.
Which is hilarious. And then like it cuts to the black and white production of the play, and it goes behind the curtain.
Then you get to see Jeff.
Jeff Goldblum is just sitting there, like, with his alien helmet off, and he's like,
yeah,
just talking about playing the alien for just half a second. He's in the film for like probably 5 seconds, but he is the alien, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. It's pretty great. I mean, I really there's so much to, you know, in all of Wes Anderson's films. There's so many little things to fall in love with, and I mean, it's why all the smug little, you know, audience members, me included, showed up, because it's like, you know, the three little girls of Jason Schwartzman's act like little witches, and they're like, no, put our mother's ashes back, and Tom Hanks is like, I don't. Like, I don't want to, you know, Tom Hanks is the father of the wife that died. So he's, you know, he's here to take the three little girls, take them back to home while, but, I don't know. Anyway, so in the end, oh, and also Margot Robbie's in this, like low key and heaving chest, you know, really corseted all the way up to the absolute tip-top maximum of what those boobs can do. So that's in there too. And then, you know, there's some weird kind of cult-like stuff, but which is, you can't wake up if you don't fall asleep. And I kind of took so there's a moment where everyone, all the characters kind of chant, you can't wake up if you don't fall asleep. You can't wake up if you don't fall asleep. And I don't know. There's a lot of reading into that you can do. And I did, which is, you know, I was like, oh, okay. So the play is kind of like the dream that you have to have of peace, that, you know, that, will equip you for when you wake up and life starts happening again, you know, atom bombs start going off in the background and that kind of thing. But I don't know. Did any of that strike you significantly, or were you kind of checked out?
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't really interpret that line. It seemed like the setup to it was that he wanted to write a scene where everyone's lulled to sleep.
Yeah.
And then like they're trying to workshop it, and they say, okay, well, I don't know how we can get everyone to fall asleep, but let's start out with everyone asleep. And so, like, play like you're asleep. And
that was hilarious.
This funny scene where everyone instantly, you know, it's a room full of actors, you know, and
hams it up.
Yeah. And then that's all you're shown. You're never shown like, and there's never a scene in the movie where that happens, where they actually all fall asleep. And so, yeah, I mean, it's probably, symbolic of yeah, like we're all kind of in a dreamlike state going through life. Like it all doesn't make a lot of sense. We don't know how we got here, but you can't wake up until you like kind of give in to what's happening, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There might be some like Buddhist undertones to that, but yeah, I think the more telling for me moment was
that Jason Schwartzman
monologue. Schwartzman coming out and saying, yeah, like, am I playing this right? Am I playing him right? And
for sure.
And yeah, my favorite, actually going back to that, like the workshop moment, that has one of my favorite visual jokes in the whole movie. And there's one of these things where it's like the best part of Wes Anderson movie is like the dry humor and like the tiny, tiny moments. There's not a lot of like actual jokes or stuff that's really meant to be played for big laughs, but there's a lot of like nice little tiny moments. But the one that just got me was they're in this workshop and it like zooms in on, who's it? Is it Edward Norton and
oh yeah,
Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
And the whole time Bryan Cranston is playing the narrator and he's like just literally a carbon copy of like Rod Serling introducing the Twilight Zone. And so it's like zooming in on them and I think they're talking and then Bryan Cranston leans into frame suddenly just from
Am I not in this?
From the, he's like, is, which is such a funny visual because like it's literally his role is to stand straight and appear as like the narrator and introducer, and then just the visual joke of him interjecting himself into the scene,
yeah,
is just got me. I love little visual jokes like that.
Yeah, it's so upon, you know, like upon review of that whole thing, where does your score fall again? Would you bump it up or at all? Or do you enjoy it more now that we've kind of like gone over it? Or
no,
sometimes
it happens to me. No, I'd still give it a 7. Like it's good. It's not like 8 and 9 feel like it's like one of my favorite movies now, you know.
Mm.
And it's not one of my favorite movies.
Which is your favorite Wes Anderson one specifically?
Probably The Life Aquatic.
Mm.
But I don't think that's necessarily his best movie. That's just my favorite. Like,
yeah,
I love Bill Murray and like the stuff that happens in that and the soundtrack and like it's probably one of the best formats for Wes Anderson, and he duplicates it in movies after, like the actual, you know, kind of stage look of compartmentalized rooms, you know.
Yeah.
But I think probably his best movie is probably the Grand Budapest Hotel.
That I really like Grand Budapest, but I think Moonrise Kingdom is much more my cup of tea. Although, can't forget about Rushmore. Like, Rushmore is fucking great. Like,
yeah.
All of the angsty fucking undertones of Rushmore are so great. Like, and Jason Schwartzman just really put Jason Schwartzman on the map with that one as like,
yeah,
the fucking cool guy who's not cool at all. Like, it might be the start of that, you know, like, yeah, so cool, but like not at all.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they're all,
They're all pretty good.
They're all pretty great. I mean, even Bottle Rocket's pretty great. I haven't seen that forever, but...
Remember Luke Wilson? What happened to Luke Wilson? I love Luke Wilson. Oh, I'll tell you what happened to Luke Wilson. He's in an HBO show that I watched pretty much the whole way through. Let's see here. It's something about Mars. Luke Wilson. I think he made it. I think he was the driving force behind that.
Oh, Fired on Mars?
Fired on Mars. Have you watched that?
I think I watched the first episode, maybe.
It's pretty great.
I didn't get into it. It looked good. It looked cool, but it's not my cup of tea.
I really enjoy a lot of what Luke Wilson has done. I think he's kind of underrated, especially compared to Owen. Like, I'd take Luke any day of the week.
Right.
Anyway.
No, he's great. And he's great in, like, little bit parts, too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, like, don't sleep on Vacancy. Like, great horror movie with Luke Wilson in it. Yeah, a lot of fun. Anywho, so there it is, our review of Asteroid City. You know what time it is now, Bryce. Do you know what time?
What time is it?
Well,
is it time to get ill?
It's 9:52, which means it's time for horror movie. What's the name of this bit? I can't remember. So this is a little bit called Horror Movie Whores, where we take your calls. If you just call us at our number, you know, we have a bat phone in our bat cave, surrounded by bats, and the number for it is 682-253-4468. Wow, I forgot it for a minute there. That's
wow, rare miss.
No, but it was, I got it right. It just left me all of a sudden. So here we go. We take your calls, and the first one, it looks like it's Eddie from Maryland. Does that sound right?
Sure.
Okay, let's go.
Hey, Dickweeds. It's Eddie from Maryland. I was just calling to not take credit for the Peach Fuzz mask. There was some confusion on one of my voicemails recently. But I did send you from Creep 2, if you remember, they're like playing pool or something, the dude and the girl. And there's a poster of that castle in autumn or fall or something like that. It's called like the Neuschwanstein Castle or some shit. It's German, maybe. Anyway, I just thought it was cool, and that's what I sent you for Christmas last year. So I'm sorry if it was unmarked. I just thought it was neat. Also, I wanted to ask you if you guys dug Joe Bob Briggs from Shudder. Well, not from Shudder, but like Monster Vision and all that stuff from back in the day. Cool. Yeah. You guys have a great day. Thanks. Bye.
Well, there you go. Thanks for clearing that up, Eddie. I'm now not confused at all. So Bryce, do you watch, or did you when in back in the day, did you ever watch Joe Bob Briggs?
No, but apparently he's beloved among horror fans.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom used to watch him some, which is strange to me.
Really? It goes that back that far?
Yeah, I believe so. Joe Bob Briggs.
Is it just like midnight movie show, basically? Like, that's the sense I got. Like, he'd just kind of host Elvira style a screening of a
yeah
B movie.
So here we go. Here, for those of you who are as dumb as me, an American syndicated film critic, writer, actor, and comic performer. He's known for having hosted Joe Bob's Drive-In Theater on the Movie Channel on TMC from 86 to 96, spanning 2 decades. The TNT television
86
series
to 96 would be 1 decade.
No, that's spanning 2 decades.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, thank you for the correction.
Spans. You're right.
I know I'm right. depth. And also the TNT television series Monster Vision from 96 to 2000, spanning another two decades.
Okay.
The last drive-in with Joe Bob Briggs on Shudder. So, yeah, yeah, wow. Really, really cranking it out for a long time. Anyway, he's got a big titty goth girl with him now on Shudder. Shudder.
Well, no now longer. I'll watch it.
Yeah, there you go. He's a guy. He likes horror movies. There you go.
Cool. Next that, caller.
Same what? Hey, it's Robert. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Carter. I just wanted to call in. I had two things to tell you guys. So.
Love the dogs.
Thing was I was listening to an old podcast, an old afterpod, and you guys played some clips from "They're All Gonna Laugh at You" by Adam Sandler, mm-hmm. which is one of my favorites, and I really like that. So, just suggesting you, I'm just saying you guys should do that again, especially medium bass, which is super funny. And the other reason I called was because I was thinking about movies that. David might be okay.
He's calling from a kennel.
From the dog pound.
Robert the Farter is actually inside of a cage right now.
Hey, guys, I really like Adam Sandler. Bark, 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 bark.
Bark, 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 bark.
Because he's seen them many times or he really likes them, and they are, like, chill enough to be kind of kids' movies, but they're also, at the same time, horror. So... I was thinking Beetlejuice and Ghostbusters mainly, and I was just thinking you guys should just, I mean, those would be good ones that David probably knows well enough that
oh, yeah.
he could see them. So, anyways, it's Robert the Farter, and see you guys later. It's Robert the Farter.
He's been holding it in for a while.
Wow, bringing it in with that one. All of the dogs are forgiven. Yeah, no, Beetlejuice is, I mean, maybe the best movie ever made. That's a good, it's a fucking great movie. And I don't have anything against Ghostbusters. Yeah, for sure. I would definitely watch those. So, yeah, good thinking there. Also, Adam Sandler, obviously, if you've been sleeping for some reason for like 30 or so years on, you know, Adam Sandler's first couple of albums.
Yeah, treat yourself.
Treat yourself. That's a trip back to middle school. So have fun with that.
Hi, this is Sam from Indianapolis. I'm listening to your Five Nights at Willy's Wonderland episode. And David's talking about Brazil nuts and his grandma having a funny word for him. Mm. My grandpa, he had the same word, and that's how I learned that word, and I did not know that that word was a bad word until I asked my grandpa what it meant one day. And then I learned that he was extremely racist. But I was like 5, so I didn't get it until much later in life. And I looked back and I was like, oh my. But yeah, Brazil nuts. That is a silly name they have for it.
Yeah, what? Okay, I want to know the percentage of old millennial kids that learned the N-word. From nut.
Brazil nuts.
You know?
From their grandma eating Brazil nuts.
It's fucking terrible, and I don't condone it, but it is interesting that that a nut could key you into your ancestors' racism more than anything else. But
my grandma would call them that, but she used, you know, she didn't use a hard R, so it's okay.
Is it okay? I don't know. Well, thanks, Sam.
Hey, guys. It's Elizabeth. Long time missy. It's been a bit. Really enjoyed the last episode. I forget what it was. It was like ghosts or something. Anyway, I want to know if you guys believe in ghosts, because I thought that you would mention it or talk about it, but I don't recall it being on the episode. So I want to know if you guys believe in ghosts. Also, this is just a PSA for Halloween fans. You can come after me if you want. We get it. Okay? We understand that you think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but please. Just because I don't like it doesn't mean that, you know, you need to come after me. This is personal. I'm sorry. Please. We get it. Okay? So yeah, ghosts. You guys believe in ghosts. Also, if you haven't played the Texas Chainsaw Massacre game, y'all should, because it's a ton of fun. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
She might be talking about Shudder, that there's ghosts in Shudder.
Mm.
And I thought I made it pretty clear from the game.
You don't believe in ghosts.
Yeah, I don't believe in ghosts anymore.
Yeah, I think I believe in ghosts. Probably not the stereotypical ghosts, but I definitely believe that there is stuff out there that we don't know that it exists right now and have no way to know that it exists right now. And, you know, probably, I mean, you know, in the 50s, you know, in the 50s, we were fucking sure we knew everything. And then in the 60s, we were also sure we knew everything. And in the 70s, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And
yeah,
learning what we don't know all the time. And so, yeah, probably something like that.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, like, the last straw for me was when I actually went on a, you know, what was it, like a ghost tour of Portland? Or it was like an underground thing where it was like, oh, the type of people where they, like, get these psychic experiences or whatever in these groups or feel the presence of stuff. It's like, oh, they're just attention whores, you know? They're
well,
just
yeah, but you're basing your belief of whether or not something exists on the people who are willing to exploit the fact that that thing is, you know, impossible to know.
I've heard, like, really cool stories from people. Like, I don't know. It's never happened to me, and there's not someone that's wanted it to happen to them more, you know? And
yeah, but I mean, I've never found an asteroid on the ground, but I know it happens, you know, and then all of the things that don't happen to me that exist, there's fuck a billion, you know, like, it doesn't mean it's not real. It's just means it's like, I don't know. It's not relevant to Bryce's life is what he's saying to you right now.
I mean, I want to believe. I would love to stay in a hotel and see a ghostly figure walk across the hallway. And I just don't think that's ever going to happen.
But what if it's not that? You know, what if it's not the thing that is portrayed normally? You know, what if it's a different thing, you know?
Like what?
I don't know, something that's not necessarily spooky or something like that. Maybe it's just something, you know, a life form or like in the next stage of consciousness following life that we can't detect but is real on a plane that we can't find but kind of occasionally crosses into this one. I don't know.
Well, I would be interested in experiencing that crossover and having some kind of, you know, registration of my senses to acknowledge it, but it's never happened.
Well, you gotta go. You can't sit you can't sit in your office and wait for it. You have to go out and look for it. You gotta become a ghost hunter.
Right.
You have to hunt for the ghosts, Bryce.
Okay.
Are you gonna hunt for the ghosts?
I've been in places that were said to be haunted. And, yeah, nothing.
Well, there you go. I'm very excited for this next call.
Okay.
Very excited. Haven't heard from...
Hi, it's Beyond the Grave. I haven't called in a long time, but I just watched Willy's Wonderland, and I feel there was a peak in that movie, and for me, it was the excitement of him getting everything cleaned up. I thought that would be more part of the premise, because I was like, oh, you know what sounds exciting and is really exhilarating for me? Cleaning some gross mess and then it looking immaculate later. When he was wiping off all that dust and grease off shit, I needed that montage.
Speaking of language.
I think... what I'd be interested in for a sequel or in the future. More home renovation horror, where we're seeing things go bad to good, but like, let's say it's like a possession story, but the whole time the demons or the ghosts or whatever are just working to pull one over on these humans, and they'll kill them after they've done cleaning the house. Like a Beetlejuice, but instead of like, oh, we need to drive these people out, they just sit down, they're chill for a little bit. Everyone comes in, wipey-wipey, scrub, get all the grout cleaned out and stuff, and then the ghosts say, okay, this house is clean. Let's start getting rid of these tenants. Well, have a good Labor Day.
Man,
yeah, I mean, like, these ghosts have lived in these houses for hundreds of years, and they're just hanging out, not like reaching up and getting those cobwebs. It's like, you know, if you got time to lean, you got time to clean, ghosts.
Lean to clean. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's very possible your priorities change when you shift forms of existence, you know? Like,
yeah.
Could be that you don't even, like, experience reality in the same...
Huh.
What if we're ghosts that, like, shift into other planes of existence for other people? And we're like, you know, when our emotions run really hot...
Uh-huh.
Then that's like the moment that'll force our frequency up into like another plane of existence and be like a ghostly apparition for someone right. else. So it's like when you're like yelling like into the Taco Bell drive-through thing uh-huh. and they can't hear you, like, motherfucking, I wanted the fucking Chipotle fries! And they're like, oh shit! You know, like a ghost is coming through and he wants Chipotle fries! I don't know, maybe that's a thing. Just speculating. There's
like an alternate dimension where they're like, yeah, this house is haunted by a presence that sometimes appears speaking into a microphone complaining about corporate movies.
Wow. It's terrifying. Oh, a movie reviewer from another dimension. No! We don't need any more of those.
He must have some unsettled movie reviews he needs to.
Yeah, I hear he stopped reviewing these and now he's just a fucking dick. Okay, that's it. I'm calling it. You guys,
we only got two more. Let's just run it out.
I don't want to go over time here. I really don't want to. So we're saving the next two for another time. I hope you guys have a great week. We love you. And, you know, help us out by joining our Patreon and getting all the good stuff over there. And we love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Good day, sir. Good day, sir. You lose. You get nothing.
Is that for me?
Yes, it is.
Took a stroll through the scraggly woods.
He had no face!
Horror!
Wow, that didn't sound good.